Hello, everyone. Today is January 17th, 2012, and welcome to the fifth metadata workshop for the Open Ontology Repository Project. My name is Michael Gruninger. I will be the session chair today. Today's topic is crosswalk between OMV and CTS2 and other relevant work by the Ontology Representation Working Group at NIH and NCI. It is my great pleasure to introduce today's panelists, Harold Solbrig from the Department of Biomedical Informatics at the Mayo Clinic, Sherry DeCoronado at NCI and NIH, and Brian Davis, Third Millennium, who's Alan Hamilton. At this point, I would just like to turn it over then to, I believe, Harold. And if everyone has their slides, we can begin. Welcome, Harold.
Thank you, Mike. I'll try to stay with the slide numbers here. The focus of this talk today is talking about how OMV and the Common Terminology Services 2 specification align. I'm assuming that the majority of the audience is already familiar with the ontology metavocabulary, but I'm also assuming that the majority of the audience needs some introductory material on CTS2. So slide 2. Get over here, there we go. What I'm going to do is do an introduction to what we're trying to do with Common Terminology Services 2, and then using that introduction, talk about the crosswalk, how we were guided by the OMV, and how we ended up incorporating the OMV contents into CTS2. So slide 3 is a header slide. It's just the CTS2, a brief introduction. Okay, slide 4. CTS2 stands for Common Terminology Services 2. The 2 is because there's a spec out there already that was issued by Health Level 7 and the ISO Healthcare Working Group called Common Terminology Services. CTS2 builds on the semantics of those services, but is considerably different than what was in CTS2. And its formal definition is on the slide here, a standard for a combination of a shared semantic model and API for query interchange and update. And the CTS specification was just query. And we talk about terminological content. There's it's an issue we always wrestle with because there's ontology, which as a broad term, which is, dang near anything that isn't an information model, as near as I can tell. And then there's the more constrained definition of ontology that involves formalisms and what have you. We've been using the term terminological content to cover a whole broad set of information, code value sets, lexicons, thesauri, classification systems, etc. And one slide I didn't put in here, but I thought I'd just speak to real briefly, is you'll see a lot of comments along the line that my lexicon will grow up to be a thesaurus and my thesaurus will grow up to be an ontology. In using these things, we've discovered over time that each of these resources serves a very different role in the semantic ecosystem. A thesaurus, for example, organizes knowledge about knowledge, and it can be anchored on ontology, and one would expect that it wouldn't contradict ontology, but thesauri say things like, if you're looking for X, you might also look for Y, or, if you're looking at insects, maybe you should also be looking at pests. Even though there's no ISA relationship directly between ISA and pests or vice versa. Slide 5, why did we do this? In the medical field especially, we're counting on a lot of different semantic resources, some that actually whose lineage dates back to the 16th century and earlier, the classification of diseases, some which involve organizing knowledge about medicine, some which involve specific ontologies and classifications of medicine. And then there's a whole set of ancillary work that goes along with it. I mean, it's the backbone stuff, the Dublin's Core, SCOS, language codes, country codes, et cetera. And slide six, there's people using these things all over the planet, and the resources are available in all sorts of different formats, different grammars, et cetera. I think at one point, it was somebody here on the Open Ontology Forum that mentioned that they couldn't sign up for something because a website had accidentally omitted New Mexico from the states list on selecting your state of residence or something. I mean, that's just a simple example of the sort of issues we face. Okay. I have got myself off on slides. There we go. Okay. Slide seven. And so one of the things we're looking for, there's another slide that probably goes with this I should have included as well, but the whole notion of interoperability is you start with a human being that in some fashion transcribes their knowledge or a fact into a computable format. The computable format is reasoned about and looked at, and good things happen in the computers. But eventually it's got to drop out to the same human being or another human being, and they've got to transfer it back into a meaning that makes sense to human beings. If we go to slide eight, this is one of the many slides you're going to find in DL descriptions and what have you. And they come with three parts. A syntax, which gives you all the basic tokens and ways that you can combine things. A mathematics that describes the implications and what's done in the computer regarding the symbols. But the thing on the right-hand side, the interpretation, while that's a great justification for what we're doing, it's also our job to actually make this interpretation solid. If I say tree, into a computer, I need to be looking at the definition that says, when you say tree, you mean a growing plant with woody branches, et cetera, et cetera. If I say tree and they talk about a logic formalism that involves a type of graph, I've made a mistake going into the system to begin with. And similarly, on the outside, You've done reasoning about trees and plants and what have you, and you give me additional information that you've gleaned. I need to transform it back into a form that I understand. Slide nine. So all these things that get you in and out are all those things that in L1 run under the category of annotation property, which was kind of, it was there, but it was almost an afterthought. It was labels, definitions, examples, notes, et cetera, et cetera. And if you go to slide 10, just taking definitions as an example, if I pull up a bit of RDF, the backbone of the net, I find the closest thing approximating a definition under a tag called comment. If I pull up BFO, a candidate upper-level ontology, and I want a definition, I, at the moment, find it under comment, but I also have to parse the content a little bit and find something that begins with definition colon. I go to Ochre, and they've defined their own tag, statistics definition. Hopefully, if I actually start reasoning about Ochre, I'll find it tied to something that means something, but in its raw form, it's a completely different thing. And while I may not be representing the most current version of the NCI thesaurus, in there they've got a property named definition where they've embedded in C data some additional information about the source of the definition and other information. The problem with all of those is we can load all of these into an ontology repository. But until we understand that all of the things I just showed you are definitions, there's just not a lot we're going to be able to do with it today. Slide 12, list continues. Nothing big there. So, slide 13, the goal of the Common Terminology Services Model. I say first to specify a common model, and I underline A and want to stress it. The CTS2 model is not defined, is not intended to be the way that one needs to represent terminological content. And in fact, there are many, many different ways that apply to many, many different purposes. It's just a way for representing the content so that you can exchange the information amongst services and repositories. An important thing about CTS2, and it relates very directly to what's going on in the OMV, is that it's okay to just browse ontologies when you're using it to just index web resources, but when you start doing, you know, anchoring the practice of medicine or anchoring decisions on ontology, you need to know a heck of a lot about what the data is for, who wrote it, et cetera. You need to know all the metadata about it. And then the third one, as far as the CTS2 goal, is we want mechanisms that allow us to link different services together, to essentially have multiple images of a bioportal or an OOR or entirely different servers out there with different implementations that nonetheless can both exchange information and can reference one another in a way that clients, little web apps, JavaScript, etc., can pull the information and use it without having to worry about what server they're on. Slide 14 is a key goal that came from the medical community, but I think it applies elsewhere, is to provide a bridge that allows medicine to incorporate more traditional resources. Resources that, while you can express an L, you often find that you're adding in semantics that the author didn't intend, but to integrate them into a cohesive whole. So slide 15, which is the process, just real briefly, what's going on with CTS2. It was the CTS2 requirements came up through Health Level 7, a healthcare group, and it was a notion that HL7 was going to provide the requirements. We were going to throw it over the wall to the object management group that would develop the formal specification to meet the requirements, and then it would go back to HL7. I think I'm going to mention this again in a minute, but one of the things that we stipulated at Mayo when we got involved is we don't want another standard that's just for healthcare. There's almost nothing in CTS2 that is, you know, healthcare specific or is dependent on healthcare. It's just that healthcare's needs in this area at the moment seem to be kind of, you know, driving some of these things to happen. Just a graphical rendering on slide 17. In fact, just move on to slide 18. HL7 creates the service functional model. OMG issued the RFP. The vendor community, a group of us together, put together a standard that was adopted by the OMG as a beta. I don't know whether that's the right term, but as a standard that we're going to then implement, and as we implement it, we're going to go through a finalization process to get all the clarifications in. And the beta standard has been issued. It was issued in June, and we're in the process right now of deploying and writing implementations, finding bugs, clarifications, etc. Okay, slide 19. A key that we find we have to stress is CTS2 isn't software. It's an API specification, and it just defines the semantics and interactions that can occur between a client and a server. I use the analogy of a blueprint. And like a blueprint, it has to be fairly involved and precise. If you move on to slide 20, just to follow up with the analogy here, if you looked at the terminology services as the blueprint for an engine, which is kind of a fun analogy, you could look at the blueprint for the engine should provide specifications so that it can be used by a lot of different clients, be it just simple go-karts up to fancy Mercedes. And also it should be put together in such a way that if you're into building big performance engines or complete terminology services, you have a spec to do that. But you can also build small services or even components of services. So slide 26, the CTS2 spec is based on the representational state transfer architecture. That paradigm on the end makes that sound just a little too highfalutin. The key, however, is that when we did the implementation independent model, we took REST into account. We said what we need to do is define resources and the relationships between them. And because we know what our primary target uses are going to be in a REST place. And it turned out that that was dang useful for modeling. Using REST as an underpinning for modeling gave us a lot of benefits that we didn't even anticipate. The CTS2 spec was heavily influenced by the REST API that many of you are familiar with in BioPortal. And some of the areas we just took what they were doing and occasionally renamed things or added additional entities. And in one place in particular that things were added in was from the work, I'm trying to remember, did I get that acronym right? Anyway, the ontology metadata working group and the OMV played a very important part in what we put in there. Another key point is the spec tends to be pretty, well, the spec is big, but it's designed with a modular implementation. So I'll talk on that a bit more in a minute. Slide 22, as I mentioned earlier, it's designed so that services can be distributed and federated. We, as part of the not healthcare specific, it was put through the object management group through the ontology platform SIG, not the healthcare domain task force. And it was reviewed and validated by folks that were working in RDF, OWL, and the ODM community. It's designed to support and to be another form of information, just a little more structured on the semantic web. And a key thing here, too, is this is not to be intended to be a spec that says this is all you can do with terminology services. This is a spec that's intended to say four things you want to do in common. Here is one approach to doing them in a common fashion that will allow what you've done to be reused, that will allow widgets that are written for BioPortal to be used other places, that will allow you to write widgets for services that you can port to OOR, etc. So slide 23 is simply the CTS2 conformance points. And the reason I want to talk on these is just because we're going to be talking about one small component or one component of CTS2. Move to slide 24. I don't know where the word linear value proposition originated, but I first heard it from a fellow named Charlie Mead. And it's a fairly simple concept. It's just make easy things easy and make the pain proportional to the gain. We took this philosophy with the CTS2 spec. And the nice thing is that the RESTful architectural style, it turned out to be just a natural fallout of it, where you could implement exactly what you needed and in terms of which resources you implement, which functionality you represent, and how you represent that. I'm on slide 24. I just noticed there was a mishap there. Okay, so slide 25, this is the set of resources that are defined in the CTS2 spec. I won't go into a huge amount of detail here, but the key is today we're talking about the first two, the code system catalog entry, and actually the next one should be code system version catalog entry. Entity description ends up being the lexical properties of classes, properties or individuals. Association is the semantic associations. Maps are maps between terminologies or ontologies. Value sets are subsets of terminologies that serve as valid meanings for data fields. Concept domains are bindings between value sets and terminology, and statement is a low-level model that describes how CTS2 content was derived from RDF or something else. Slide 26, as far as the conformance points go, you can implement each of the bullet points on this slide basically is a different conformance point. And a simple conformance point, if you, for instance, wanted to publish a catalog of ontologies you knew, just a simple list of what was out there that people could access, you could implement the read or direct access API, and you could implement the code system catalog entry structure. When I say implement, two of those can be built and can be fully compliant if you use an XML editor to edit the contents, and an Apache web server or even a file server is sufficient to deploy a, quote, compliant CTS2 resource. Slide 27, from the representational perspective, the primary target on representation on the first release is XML schema. We get JSON for free, although we have to specify the transform. One in particular that is of interest in the future when we put RDF down there, we want to publish what we call canonical RDF. And it's the notion that you saw the RDF, the BFO spec, the NCI thesaurus earlier. And if you're able to import those into the CTS2 model so that all three of those are tagged with definition, one of the obvious things you're going to want to do is to put it out in RDF, but instead of replicating what was there, RDF comment definition equals, you want to put it out with SCOS definition, because that's, you know, pretty much the accepted or a widely adopted field anyway for the SCOS definition. The canonical RDF, our goal is as much as possible to use existing ontologies and existing content. It would be perfect if we could disappear the CTS2 tags together, there's a bit of work to be done there. But that's for another subject anyway, because we're dealing specifically with the crosswalk here. Slide 28 and slide 29. On the crosswalk, in order for it to make sense, I need to do a few drill downs into some of the details of the CTS2 model. And I also want to talk about the relationship of abstract resources and resource versions in CTS2, because I know the OMV people wrestled with that in the specification, and the current version of the specification has a single resource that represents both of those, and we'll talk about why CTS2 decided to choose two of them. Slide 30, title slide, the model details. Okay, slide 31, one thing we ended up doing just for our own sanity in the CTS2 spec is at the core of the spec, we said, you know, even though it's an abstract spec, we're going to put a stake in the ground, and we're going to represent all of the resources that we talk about in CTS2 using URIs. And the problem we hit is that there's a number of different circumstances where these URIs are used. And the one that we kept confusing horribly in our own heads was the URI of the resource being described. Let's say the Wine Ontology Cabernet, Class Cabernet. And the CTS2 rendering of the Wine Ontology Class Cabernet, which, although you could be clever and go through Perl servers or various things, resolves to a different resource in the end. Because Cabernet is about wine, and the CTS2 rendering of Cabernet is about a web resource. And by separating out these types and making sure that we typed all of our links, we ended up with the model that we didn't, that ended up just being a lot cleaner, and you'll see a bit more of that in the slides coming. The second, on slide 32, the second little model element we've got here, name and meaning reference, which is actually derived from 1179, in the service itself, we've imported it, and we have identifiers for all sorts of things, formats or MIME types, languages, a number of things actually derived from the OMV ontology engineering tool, etc. And when we talk about them within the context of the service, we want to have some sort of local identifier there that communicates to folks using it what it's about. When we reference it, however, we need to have an external URI, the URI that stands for the language. And where appropriate, if the server knows about it, we also want to have an href that you can go to and get a CTS2 rendering of the same thing. So in this example, I've got a local identifier English standing for the English language. You'll note the URI down below, one of the interesting things that we discovered, and we could sure do for some help, is that there are a couple of things in the W3C that don't have, as near as we can find, official URIs. And those are language codes and MIME types. And we've thought about trying to concoct a URI. In fact, HL7 did concoct a URI based on an OID object identifier for the ISIL language spec, but in the end, at the moment, what we're thinking we're going to do is just have the OMG, lacking a better institution, just throw these two URIs out there so that we can actually reference languages and MIME types. Anyway, there's name and meaning reference appears throughout the CTS2 spec, which is why I put it there. And just as a sample so that the models don't get overwhelming, this is a name and meaning reference to a resource, OWL ontology. And the notion is you have the URI and then the namespace and name. When you're referencing the very closely related, when you're referencing something inside ontology, a class, predicate, or individual, we have the structure of entity reference. It has a URI, an entity name, and then a scoped entity name. One of the reasons this is here is that, as of yet, there doesn't seem to, or we haven't been able to find a 100% reproducible way to take a URI and split it into the namespace and the code or the identifier. So some ontologies, will, if you have a hash separator, will graciously put the hash on the namespace. Some put the hash on the tag. Some assume that you're clever enough to put the hash in and you don't actually see it. Then you compound that with the fact that not all ontologies use hashes. Some use slashes. And if you get into digital object identifiers or ISOOIDs, there's other things. We said we can't, in this spec, put a stake in the ground as far as what ontologies are all about. So we We just said it will be represented with both an external URI and, if possible, a scoped entity name, a namespace name. Now, one of the real benefits of this scoped entity name is that it's service specific. You never exchange between servers a namespace OMV because you don't know whether the other server called it OMV. They may have called it something else. You always interchange with URIs. That means that as far as scoped entity name goes, you might be able to pick a label, a language-specific label, the RDFID. Essentially, the analogy, if you've used Protégé 4, one of the things you get to pick when you go into an ontology is which attribute or which predicate in the ontology is used to represent the names of things. And it's the similar notion in the service, or you a clever client, it's not in the spec, but a clever client could negotiate with the service and say, I'd like to see the French representations. Slide 35, another example. This is a reference to the OMV ontology class, used ontology engineering tool. And there wasn't enough room on the slide to really put it on an href, but the notion is if you have a CTS2 service that talks about this somewhere, you can put in an href to get there. Okay, resource description. I'm on slide 36. One of the things that was surprisingly confusing, and so I wanted to just get into this spec here, I think I touch on it more a bit later, is that resource descriptions are about resources. The resources they're about are not inside the spec. They may be digital resources elsewhere on the web, or they may be resources entirely outside of the digital space. What we have in our service is a description of this resource, and the individual attributes under there will be touching on a little bit more later, so I'm not going to dive into that. Slide number 37. One other minor point, and I just wanted to get this here because we're going to talk about it later. We have a class called Source and Role Reference, and it just combines a role that typically we derive from Dublin Core. If necessary, a bibliographic link, and then the URI of a source that was used in the resource. The reason for the bibliographic link, by the way, is some resources you'll pull in and they'll say we used Dictionary X page 43, Dictionary X, page 47, and we wanted to be able to know that, first off, they were all derived from the same Dictionary X, and then the bibliographic link told you the specific locator. So there's an example on page slide 38 of a source and role reference. This one says that the source was the National Library of Medicine, and its role was, according to Dublin Core, creator. Slide 39, that's just a topic slide. Slide 40, resource description. I know the OMV went through this issue, or went through this, and in fact, some of the early versions of the spec provided invaluable advice. What we ended up realizing in the CTS2 spec, and this is talking now specifically about ontologies or code systems, there were three different things that we were talking about. The first one was the abstract resource. We'll talk like the Owl Wine ontology, the SNOMED CT, the Dublin Core, or DC terms to be specific. These are resources that have identities and characteristics that persist over time and remain the same even though the versions change. Another one that's kind of interesting is the abstract resource called RDF, the resource or RDF syntax, resource description framework. These versions are these abstract resources, in turn, are coupled with very specific releases. If you look inside the RDF spec, the RDF for RDF, as it were, you'll find comments that make you realize that there are actually three different versions of this thing we called RDF. I don't remember the dates. It was 99, 2005, and 2009 or something. But there were actually three different versions of this resource, and at one point in time, they all had different identifiers. So in the CTS2 model, we said we need metadata about the resource. Who publishes it? How often is it published? What formats might it be published in, and a lot of interesting stuff that's described in the OMV specification. We also realized that we needed to be able to name and describe individual releases of this. I wanted to be able to say the 2008 version of RDF and have a consumer know exactly what I'm talking about, know that it what classes it had and what classes it didn't have. So that becomes the resource version description. Now, I said there were three types. The resource version, it turns out, at least in most of the worlds we're in, frequently can come in different formats. SNOMED CT, for instance, is published in, two formats that come out of the organization themselves called Remise Format 1 and 2. There is at least one OWL rendering of SNOMED CT available, and there's also a rendering available from the National Library of Medicine. Now, while theoretically these are all about the same release of the same resource, if I've got the SNOMED CT 2010 AA edition, that's an important question you have to ask before you know what is or isn't in the resource. With a few minor exceptions, the format and syntax of the resource is a necessary component to really understand what is and isn't in it. So for the CTS2 model, we cut it down to two. We said there's a resource description, and the resource version includes in it the source and notation used in the resource. And the idea being that it's not going to be very often that you have a service that serves multiple formats, but if you do, you just need to come up with a separate version for each one. Slide 41 is kind of just to make a description of code system catalog entry, and we'll be getting into more details, so to be honest, I'm not sure why I even included that one. But slide 42. Why do we call it code system catalog entry instead of code system? This leads back to Marge's pipe. The caption below says this is not a pipe, and yet there it is. It's a picture of a pipe, and it applies very much. A code system catalog entry is not a code system. It's metadata about a code system. It's an entry in a catalog that describes an external resource, that green box I talked about earlier, that's somewhere else. And it's a fairly extensive collection of metadata about a code system. So that leads directly and probably very abruptly into the crosswalk between code system and OMV. What I've done is just taken the list of OMV terms and put them on the right. Apologies, there's a couple of capitals there that shouldn't have been capitalized. PowerPoint just does that to you. And put the element on the left that aligns with it. So what CTS2 calls code system name is equivalent to the OMV acronym, although that's one place where I got to go back and look at cardinality constraints I don't remember whether acronym was mandatory in OMV. It is in CTS2. The next line down, there's a number of places where we changed names. And this is one of the places where we changed names. We noticed even within the OMV spec, nobody was actually writing this dang thing out. It was being shorthanded as, confirms TKRP or something like that. We'd already had a requirement elsewhere for the category that it was in, and so we ended up just calling it category. It's intended to be the same field. The other place, if you move to the third element down, ontology domain, the OMV model took a philosophy that elements within the model were labeled with nouns. Elements that referenced external models were labeled with verbs. So if it was an element directly in the OMV model, it would have said contributor, but because it pointed at a resource or pointed at a model called contributor that had a name and a description and what have you, it said has contributor. The restful approach in CTS2 we don't have external models for contributors and public and that's our people and that sort of stuff. So we stuck strictly with nouns. And here, no sooner do I say that, and then I see I've got a couple in here where I lied, because we put design for ontology task directly in there. Has ontology language. There's two pages of this is what's going on. What you're seeing here is the first part of OMV with the lines that correspond to what's in CTS2. If you move on to slide 44, this is the rest of the stuff. Now, the other thing you're going to note on this cross map is there's some things in bold, and then there's a number of things in not bold. We'll take natural language, number of axioms, number of classes, etc. The reason for this is that these aren't characteristics of the abstract ontology. The number of classes in the wine ontology depends upon which version you're looking at. Interestingly, the number of predicates in RDF depends on which version you're looking at. So the ones that aren't in bold, we determined are version specific. There were a number of places where we kind of had a problem because, for instance, description is applicable both to the abstract resource and the specific version of the resource. And we had to basically decide just by looking at how it was used, which was more appropriate. So if you move down to slide 45, this is the same map, except this is the code system version map. So you'll notice creation date, that was an interesting property that we wrestled with a little. And by the way, when I'm saying we, it's a combination of the CTS2 people and the ontology representation working group that represented by some other people on the line. When we came to creation date, when the OWL, let's take the wine ontology, was initially created is a hard thing to find, and frankly it isn't very interesting. What was interesting was when a particular version of an ontology was created, but then that led to the problem of what do you mean by created? Do we put in the date that Deb McGinnis first said, ooh, we need to add one more thing to this, or do we put in the date that everybody said this is the last change we're going to make, it's final? And kind of the way we finesse this in CTS2 is we've said, okay, ontology or code system authors can and should assert some sort of official date, you know, at which point in time this is considered to be released. We called it the official release date and mapped it to creation date. Another thing you'll note here that I talked a little bit about earlier is that OMV has a series of labeled lines that involved endorsed by, created by, has contributor, and it's in the CTS2 model. For the sake of generality, we collapse those into the source and role buckets so that you could, if you had validated by or secondarily endorsed by or just all the other wonderful verbs you could put in involving an ontology, you could add those in as well without having to extend the model. Rights mapped to has license, and I'm spend a while there, but that's just the general idea. Slide 46. Now you'll note there's a few things. There were a few things on the previous page that didn't have a map. One of those is number of axioms, and the reason it didn't have a map is that we weren't able to put a precise enough definition into the CTS2 spec that our consumers felt comfortable about it. It leads to a point that we'll get to later, but real quickly, towards the bottom of the code system version catalog entry, there's an attribute called property. There's the same thing on, well, version and on code system, and property is intended to be the none of the above. And while note has a comment, keyword has a string, property is a tag value pair. So you can put in a predicate. Thus, if you know the number of axioms, you can go ahead and put in OMV number of axioms as the predicate in property and 17 as the value. So it's not that you can't do it. It's not that it's omitted. It's just a second-class property. So, to summarize the differences, and by the way, at the end of this talk, there's some URLs that will actually get you to a lot more discussion on this. The major differences between OMV and CTS2, first, CTS2 looks at an abstract resource having a zero to N relationship with versions. You can just catalog abstract resources. You can say, this is SNOMED CT and who publishes it and what it's for. Or you can just publish versions, which in the case of the OWL world is frequently what you end up doing because it's the reason OMV put version and ontology together. Is an OWL until OWL 2, there wasn't even a clear distinction between the version of the resource and the resource itself. Okay, in the naming area, here I said nouns only, but I'm lying because there were some verbs in there. When there were conflicts in names or when there were existing names, we preferred Dublin Core, like DC Rights, over OMV, what was it? I don't remember. Anyway, has the OMV tag that was the equivalent there. And, so there were naming changes. Another important change that kind of relates to the naming change is that OMV has a series of ancillary models around there. It has a model of what a party and a person, what a location is. And and CTS2, that's out of the scope. We put in a URI for those things and assume that the model's elsewhere. Slide 48, OMV also put in a specific model for a lot of the individual classes, as it were, in OMV. So ontology task had a code and a name and a description, and ontology type had a code and a name and a description. The CTS2 specification has a generic class for that, and furthermore, if you want to get to the details, the entity description part of the model gives you the code name and description. So again, instead of modeling those things, we simply said that they're URIs that reference things externally. The source and role I mentioned earlier, where CTS2 collapses it instead of using the individual tags. There were several unmapped OMV fields. I've mentioned number of axioms. This, I'm not going to read it to you, but this is the reason that was chosen why not to include it in the CTS2 spec, although parenthetically on slide 50 you have the has property builds, fields. Slide 51, which is kind of, I guess I could have tagged it on the end of slide 50. I mentioned this earlier, but when CTS2, when we get the canonical RDF out there, we have an OMV description, but I think we're going to err in favor of RDF description. And there's several other fields in OMV that instead of using the OMV tags, the canonical RDF is going to refer to the Dublin Core and SCOS, but that hasn't yet happened. That spec's going to be done this summer, the canonical RDF. So slide 52, current state next steps. The spec was adopted by the OMG. The final task force is working. We're doing error correction, and for those of you that have tried to take a look at the CTS2 spec, the thing is kind of opaque right now, where clarification is one of our tasks on the finalization task force. Of interest to some people here are these things called implementation guides. In the case of SNOMED CT, there's a number of interpretations that could be made mapping what's released by the standards or the ontology authors, mapping it into CTS2. This is in part because they don't publish in OWL. That's not their official release. They publish in their own notation. So we're working with them to define a canonical map from SNOMED CT to CTS2. That means that anybody that claims to publish SNOMED CT, you can validate that they do it and that they do it in the same fashion. A similar thing for the health level 7 tags. And there are some issues on importing OWL and RDF that we're targeting as well. The final slides have a bunch of links. The SDK is software that actually implements this as a framework so that you can plug in your own backends. The second URL is a website that, unfortunately, getting updated always seems to fall exactly number 2 on the list, but that's going to happen shortly. A lot more information. So the information on there, while valid, needs a little work to be made current. We're working very closely with the NCBO and the BioPortal. We have a wrapper for the BioPortal REST API that represents the same thing in CTS2. It wasn't a difficult task because, as I say, most of what we did was guided heavily by that anyway. And we're going to be putting the wrapper out on BioPortal for people to kick the tires. We already have a wrapper for the native RDF that does Sparkle queries, and that will be out shortly. A lot of details about this talk can be found on the final page there. Here's some URLs for examples with the slide 56. Caveats that some of these carry embedded HTML in the descriptions and definitions, and certainly Firefox, when it sees what it thinks is a valid HTML tag, changes its whole rendering strategy, so sometimes you have to use show source if you want to see it in HTML. And then on slide 57, some URLs for the BioPortal example. As I say, we're going to be publishing this very shortly on the BioPortal site itself, and access to a couple of implementations, and that is pretty much what I've got to say.
Well, thank you very much, Harold. That was a great overview and a lot of nice juicy details. So I think there's going to be a lot of discussion. I was just noticing, first of all, though, on the chat, Dean Elleming dropped a call just as you were talking about how CTS2 versions work with OWL2 versioning, and that was something of great interest to him. Could you perhaps just give a slight recap of that? I think that was around slide 50.
Okay, there wasn't a huge amount that was in there, but the OWL2 version now very gracefully has two URIs that you can use, although they're not mandatory. And one is, gosh, I have to remember which the two are again, but one is the URI of the ontology itself, and a second one is the URI of the ontology version. And this allows us to very gracefully assign the primary URI, the one that's used to represent the ontology independent of versions, to the code system catalog entry. And then the code system catalog entry has a hyperlink in it, or a link in it, that takes you to a directory of all the known versions. And that directory, in turn, allows you to pick up the various versions you want. While I'm thinking about it, there's one thing I didn't mention here, but we found it to be in a very important part of this model, is that services can assign tags to versions. And that's roughly, well, it's drawn very closely from the subversion paradigm, where you can add tags to collections of releases. So a service can declare that a particular version is a production version, and a second version is a test version. And what this allows you to do is to declare something new as being in production without the client software having to change their model. OWL kind of finesses this by saying the service will very nicely return the latest version or the most appropriate or something when one retrieves a version of an OWL ontology. But latest and the one we want you to use aren't always the same thing when you're in ontology development. And so we wanted the tag to just give the service a bit more power.
Okay, great. So we actually technically did have a panel discussion here. So Sherry, did you want to add comments to Harold's presentation? So it's star 7 to unmute.
Okay. Hi. Before I make a few general comments, and thank you, Harold, that was really great. I wanted to ask a specific question about versions related to NCBO. When you were because there's a slight difference in the abstract information about a terminology versus the specific version, when you were applying it to NCBO, doing your wrappers and so forth, did you have any difficulties?
Yes. NCBO at the moment has BioPortal has a fairly limited model of the abstract ontology. Their model is very close to the OWL model. They had teased out, I'm trying to remember the name of the resource now, but they teased out an anchor because we definitely needed to know that these were all versions of the same thing. But there wasn't a huge amount of metadata associated with it. A lot of this, in subsequent versions of BioPortal, I know we're going to be adding more attributes to the abstraction itself. And a lot of this is going to be finessed anyway when we move to the RDF core. And for folks that aren't aware of that, BioPortal already has a beta Sparkle endpoint out there that they're interested in having folks kick the tires on. and the CTS2 wrapper, or it's not a wrapper, CTS2 implementation will, in the next few months, start running directly off of that RDF store.
Great. Would it be helpful if I make a couple of general comments about the ORWG group?
Yes, please, Jerry, go ahead.
In fact, I got the acronym wrong. I apologize.
No, you didn't. Ontology Representation Working Group.
Oh, okay. I thought I may have put an OMWG in it. Anyway, carry on.
So anyway, the ORWG has been meeting for probably almost 2 years now, and its original goal was to try to find a subset of metadata about terminology that would be useful for end users, helping people know about ontologies, learn about them, how they are used, when they're appropriate for use, versions, and so forth. And so the group was interested in seeing if we could develop a standard for terminology metadata or adapt something out there already. We began reviewing all the different models that might be relevant or serve as a source for a metadata standard. CABIG had worked on a terminology metadata set of information while they were in the process of reviewing terminologies. The OMV was available but wasn't terribly active. We looked at the ISO 19763. We looked at CTS2, which was not quite as far along in terms of terminology metadata as it is now, thanks to Harold. And we looked at Dublin Core, and we did some crosswalks across those, identifying where the common elements were. The one difference between what CTS2 has done and what the ORWG group was trying to do was CTS2 actually covers all of the information about a terminology that you could hope to have. And I think that's great and perfect. In reality, what we find is that the most important thing is to get the terminology metadata from the originators. We discovered in our series of terminology reviews in CABIG that most of the information, most of this metadata about a terminology is pretty hard for a reviewer to create. You really need to get it from the source. And so you've got practical limitations on what people are willing to submit with their terminology. And then you've also got the practical limitations of what users can understand. So while CTS2 has the entire set of what you might hope to have, Harold pointed out that you use what you need to use. And so in some cases, you would have less terminology metadata about a particular terminology. So to try to move forward, what the ORWG was trying to do was identify a small core set of things that we thought would be required for every terminology to understand the minimum amount of information about it. When we did all of the crosswalks and so forth, and we did a crosswalk with CTS2 and OMV, and some things that NCBO had added along with OMV, we were calling it OMV Plus, we did identify that most of the core information was pretty much covered. A small set of about 8 or 10 different metadata elements. And so the basics were pretty much there. As Harold said, the versions actually were somewhat problematic between them. But now Harold has, with his group, has actually done an excellent crosswalk and also, I think, is the most practical set of terminology metadata. Some of the things in OMV were not quite appropriate. For instance, as Harold mentioned, version date versus creation date. If you actually try to practically apply those to real terminologies, you do find out that version date is the most important thing. So a few of those things we noted as differences, but overall found that the core is mostly found in everything. At this point, though, I'm thinking that we would probably, we're still in the process of meeting, but I think CTS2 is the closest to what people would want practically. Brian, is there anything else that you would want to say about what ORWG has been doing? I guess I left out the other aspect of ORWG is to actually try to help the NCBO build a small critical mass of terminology metadata and also try to help them get feedback on ontology reviews, the sort of crowdsourcing of reviews. We've had a belief that if you could actually get a small seed set of information about terminology metadata and have some people create reviews, then you would get the public in and actually provide comments. In reality, we don't know how realistic that is now because people, they want the information and the advice, but they're not necessarily willing to sort of do a Yelp rating about terminologies. They expect whoever is supplying the terminology to be the expert, and if it's known in their domain that it's a terminology that needs to be used in their domain, then they're going to use it. And unless they have problems with it, they're not likely to, you know, put out any rave reviews or anything. So those are the two aspects of the ORWG, is trying to find this core set of metadata and that will help people understand the terminologies in which and help them find the appropriate terminologies for their use, and then to create sort of a public area where people can comment on terminologies so that people looking for terminologies can find out what other people have said about it. Brian, anything else?
Usual star 7, Brian.
Hi, I think, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Not really, Sherry. I guess one thing that seems to be going on in the chat of how CTS2 could fit into the OOR architecture is we've also been struggling, the group, the ORWG group, has been struggling a bit with what does it mean to be compliant with a standard? So are we going to advocate to be compliant to CTS2 or OMV or other standard?
Right.
And I think that probably that will be an important aspect for this OOR group. If you create an architecture, are you going to say it's compliant with certain standards? So maybe down the line, our two groups have a shared interest that we could possibly work together on, or decide how we divide up that question. I guess that's the only other aspect I think would be of interest to this group.
That's a good point, actually, and one of this crosswalk, and one of the reasons that I specifically said CTS2 was a model, is that to the best of my knowledge, there should be a relatively mechanistic transform between an OMV rendering and a CTS2 rendering, so it wouldn't be a huge task to make sure that anybody that had one had the other automatically.
Harold?
Yeah.
That raises yet another question. The OMV people we have talked to in the interim, even though it's not been an active standard, in other words, there really haven't been any changes made in quite a while because some of the people have moved on, we were considering whether we should adopt OMV as it is and add some things to it or ask them to actually make some changes to it. And it seems like in the future they are amenable to working with us to potentially make some changes, which may make the transform either not necessary or easier.
Yeah. Yeah, at the moment, we're, well, all standards, the problem you face whenever you're doing standards is that there's all sorts of great ones out there that apply to some of what you're doing already. And if you try to take every one of them in account, you find yourself in gridlock and you spend years trying to align. So we did what we could, but we very deliberately didn't tie tightly to OMV because, you know, we had to get something out that met our particular use cases. But to the extent that cross maps can be put together, I'm a little dubious, just the use cases are enough different that we would ever arrive at one cohesive spec. But
yeah, you're probably, you know, right about that.
Very closely, I mean, two, you know, obviously interrelated and non-conflicting specs was part of our goal in using them as the input to CTS2.
Right. Yeah, the other point, I guess, to make is that OMV is not really a standard. It was the best out there for a while at the time, and there is some marginal possibility that it could be brought to the ISO group, possibly as an extension to the 19763. But, you know, I don't know that anybody's committed resources or anything to that yet. It's in the talking stages. The CTS2 may actually turn out to be a standard more quickly than anything else, in which case, you know, the metadata, the code system category, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Anyway, that would be the closest to a real standard, because it will be an OMG standard.
Okay, are there any other comments then from Sherry, Harold, are there any other comments, or should we open it up for the wider discussion from other people online?
I've said what I want to say.
Me as well. Please open it up.
Okay. Since there aren't any hands up right now, just to remind everyone, if you'd like to ask a question, you can either type it directly into the chat, I suppose, but also if you want to ask it verbally, you can just raise your hand, the little hand icon in the lower right-hand corner of the chat session, and we'll use that as a way of managing questions. But I just want to maybe start off, again, thanks for the great presentation. One of the interesting issues that I sometimes toss around is what distinguishes ontology repositories from any other kind of repository, you know, like a Subversion software repository. And particularly when you were looking at the mapping, the relationship between your work and OMV, how many of the differences were kind of related specifically to kind of ontologically related concepts, and how many were more at the level of just, you know, any kind of repository? You know, let's say versioning, for example. It seemed like some of the issues you were raising, you really could apply to general, you know, software projects online, like distributed software projects with codes distributed around. And it didn't really necessarily have to do with ontologies per se. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
This is Harold Solbrig. That's I don't know whether you can scroll through the slides, but if you go to slide 40, for instance, or heck, grab 41, because that kind of if you look down through the sets of resources here at the core, we have resource description, which is reasonably abstract. Now, since we were focused particularly on ontologies and related things, maybe not everything in there is totally abstract. But then you build up one level and you talk, okay, we've got an abstract resource description and we inherit two more properties. And then we have a set of properties on the top of the diagram that are things that are very specific, or most of, are very specific about code systems. There's one that, or a couple, like includes inversions that's there rather than lower because it's tight. A code system has versions, code system versions, certainly not versions of machine parts or something. But the lower elements obviously could be used for other things. It wasn't our problem space, and I suspect that people have done better jobs of just abstract versioning stuff elsewhere. But you know, wherever we go, we're going to get a certain amount of stuff that's generic and probably could be factored out. But the last little thing down there, the changeable, turns out to be associated with anything that has identity, and that's at the core of an update model, which we didn't discuss about today, but how one changes things that have identity.
Yeah, I found it interesting, particularly on slide 49, when you were covering the unmapped OMV fields. I think pretty well all of those were ontology specific. I mean, the number of axioms, the formality level, key classes, et cetera. So that's why I kind of asked that question, because it seemed like a lot of the unmapped fields were kind of dealing with some deeper issues about specifically dealing with ontologies, particularly like your observation about the number of axioms as being a maybe perhaps not useful field in describing an ontology.
Yeah.
Harold,
yeah.
This is Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Was number of axioms actually NCBO's extension, or is it part of the core OMB? Do you remember?
Say which one again?
Number of axioms.
Oh, number of axioms is core OMB.
Okay.
It was a characterization. There were number of axioms, number of classes, number of predicates, number of individuals. And the latter three things, I didn't put a note in there, but they're derivable from links. You can, from queries you can run in. But so in fact, I mean, they may, whether they're really included or not is interesting because they're computed. They're not actually stated. But, yeah.
Right, they're computed, and they're not terribly, it doesn't tell you a lot about an ontology or a terminology, but it gives somebody who's doing a quick, you know, a quick look through a large number of terminologies, it tells them whether it's, you know, small or large or, you know, what kind of a thing it is. So the fact that it can be computed and that it's somewhat useful, it probably doesn't belong in a standard, but it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, although, as I said, the CTS2 trying to be a descriptive standard versus
right.
prescriptive, if right. a lot of people want to talk about it, it's dang handy to come up with the same name. I mean, it's the...
Right,
the Dublin core approach to things.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other questions from people online? There, just noticed a few questions being sorted out on chat.
Now there was a question about Sherry's presentation. Sherry didn't.
I didn't use any slides. I can, if people are interested, send some links to our work products on the wiki.
Yeah, actually, Peter did post the link in the chat session.
Okay.
From the NCI wiki.
Okay.
Okay, maybe just one kind of last set of questions just to maybe aim a question now at the regular OOR group. What do we think are the next steps then? should we, you know, kind of align the ongoing metadata work within OOR a little more closely with what's happening here with the CTS2 group? Any thoughts from the OOR people? Todd?
Michael?
Yes.
One of the problems that I always run into with any systems involving semantics or even I mean, whether they're explicit or implicit in terms of design and architecture, is the terminology issues. So from the architecture perspective for OOR, I would think if we had the ability to mediate some of those terminology issues, which I'm thinking this work from CTS2 has the ability to do, we should consider it and how it works in.
Okay. Yeah, maybe just tap that in the chat then. That's a good idea.
I have to type all that?
Well, the gist of it.
Okay. But again, as was pointed out, if this is going to become a specification faster than OMV, then we would probably want to adopt it and couple it with ISO. What's that specification that you always bring up, the ISO 1? It's got too many numbers in it.
So 19763?
Is that the
no,
one,
the 21090?
I don't remember. Michael, you know it. You keep bringing it up all the time. The metadata specification from ISO.
It's
11179.
Oh, thank you. That's the one, yes.
All right. But 19763 was the one Elisa Candle was giving us an introduction to a couple of months ago.
Yeah, that'd be the more relevant one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Peter, you wanted to say something.
Yes, I mean, great presentation. Thank you very much. So in terms of implementation, I mean, I didn't catch everything at the presentation just now when you talked about what's coming next on BioPortal. Obviously, with BioPortal, you've got a much closer community. How do you see the ontologies or vocabularies being properly populated with metadata? How would that be enforced? So would you guys be sort of mainly be enforcing those that come out of NCI or everything sort of across the BioPortal repertory of ontologies and vocabularies?
Are you saying you guys, are you referring to Sherry, Brian, and myself, the
ORWG, but then if we look into the ORWG roster, you see names like Natasha Noy, Trish Wetzel, and so on. So you guys would include NCBO as well, I suppose, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a very, as many of these things are, a very incestuous group, and Natasha was quite involved in the OMV work as well. And BioPortal, today has much of the OMV tags in BioPortal, and as a matter of fact, they were one of the primary proponents, Stanford, for making sure that the CTS2 accommodated it. I think as time goes on, BioPortal will simply will, at least through the CTS2 interface and probably the knowledge acquisition, will begin to expose more of the OMV directly as far as registration goes.
But currently, when NCI Thesaurus is uploaded, some or most of the OMV fields actually populated.
Say that you said are, yeah. A lot of them aren't right now, and I mean that's one of the other problems that we face with the OMV. That's kind of interesting, is that a lot of that information currently isn't available from the publishers. Like we're working with ITSIDU for SNOMED CT. One of the things we're going to want to ask them to do is to fill out a CTS2, / OMV record for what they think SNOMED CT is all about. Because if we let, if NCI says, well, this is what we think SNOMED-CT is all about, and NCBO says, this is what we think SNOMED-CT is all about, I don't know that we're necessarily doing the community a huge service where each of our descriptions differ. So I think one of the things that we hope to accomplish with this is to begin to push these sorts of requirements back to the source and say, okay, you know, here's an XML schema, and or you know, maybe we get clever and say, here's a form. Can somebody that's authorized by your body fill out this information so that we can distribute it everywhere?
Yes, yeah, that's the enforcement or the practice. Maybe Ken Bukowski can say something about our thinking at OOR as to how we are sort of holding the gate, or I mean, he actually has this gatekeeper notion as to what has to be registered before an ontology gets loaded into the OOR. Ken? Possibly? Or Todd?
I think Todd had to go. He, as a matter of fact, he's going to have to go in just a minute. I apologize.
All right, then maybe, I mean, I think we definitely look forward to continuing a very collaborative working relationship with your group between OR and ORWG. So I better
pass. Yes, Peter, this is Ken.
Yeah. Oh, Ken. Yes.
Yeah, I think that the gatekeeper and workflow functions should be, I mean, they are configurable, so we should be able to configure the specific needs of CTS2 into the OR. But it'd be, you know, we really need to work with the CTS2 people to make sure we get it right.
Yes. Great. So we better pass this back to Michael.
Okay. Well, I think if there aren't any more questions, I mean, this might be a reasonable place to stop. I think there's a lot to digest in a way, and maybe a future metadata session, I guess, which is what this is within the OOR, or perhaps a broader OOR meeting can be brainstorming on future interactions.
This is Harold, by the way. Feel free to send me questions, suggestions, and as I said, we're working to get better documentation out there, although there's a lot of interesting stuff you can find on the URL that goes to the framework site. That's probably a better entry point until we get the other website put together, but feel free to send emails. And I apologize, I have to take off here.
Well, no, that's a great place to stop. I'd just like to thank you, Harold, as well as Sherry and Brian for comments and presentation. It's a lot for us to think about, and hopefully we will be connecting again in a future OOR session. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.